Welcome back to Occult Symbolism and Pop Culture. I'm your host, Isaac Weishaupt. Today we're going to talk about Wizard of Oz for our fourth episode. That's right. Surely you've heard parts 1 through 3 already. We went so deep into Wizard of Oz, and we're going back for just a little bit more. All right? If you haven't heard those episodes, be sure to check out the link in the show notes or on IlluminatiWatcher.com. I've got a full index of every episode recorded. Hundreds and hundreds, going way back to 2014. Today we're headed back to Oz. This time we're talking about a cult classic film from the 80s called Return to Oz. We're talking about the occultists behind this film, in the making of the film, the sinister truth of MKUltra, hidden in plain sight. We're going to go through Dorothy's journey. She goes on her own little hero's journey into the underworld on her own Eleusinian mystery tour. She goes through the looking glass like Alice in Wonderland. She makes contact with an alter ego. Goes through dissociative identity disorder process. And I'm going to talk about all that. And then in the conclusion, I'm going to tie it into the Illuminati. That's right. The occultists who want to create a world in which man's consciousness is obliterated and remanifested out into the digital matrix, out into space. Space consciousness. That's what they want us to do. And that's what they're going to try to do. And it was all right there. All right there in this movie. Shout out to Dr. Anteater. He insisted I watch this. He said, Isaac, you did such a great job with the Wizard of Oz series. Take that extra step. Let's do Return of Oz. I said, no, Dr. Anteater, I can't. I can't go back in. But here we are. Now, should you watch this film before we talk about it? Not really. I mean, it's a kid's movie, so who cares? And it's 113 minutes. It's almost 2 hours for a kid's movie. Nonsense. Way too long. But it's got a cult following, so maybe this is for you. Maybe. I recall reading this book when I was a child. I could be wrong. But I have a memory of it. I had never seen the movie. Never seen it. But I have read the book, I think. But it was released back in the 80s, 1985, all right? And who's in it? Well, you got, of course, Dorothy, the main protagonist, played by Feruza Balk. Her feature film debut. And with a name like that, you know she's interesting. I'm probably mispronouncing it. Feruza Balk. She was the original emo goth girl. She was in The Craft. You know her if you've seen her. And she, in fact, at one time opened up her own occult store in L.A. So, Illuminate confirm, right? Now, she, her, that role of Dorothy was also auditioned for by Drew Barrymore, Alanis Morissette, and Juliette Lewis. And a couple of those names, if you paid attention, were subjected to abuse in Hollywood growing up as children, as young girls. Interesting they would be auditioning for the role. Now, of course, Aunt Em is back in the story. She's played by Piper Laurie. She was the mom in Carrie, who was also a witch. Carrie, a great movie. I think it was John Travolta's debut on film. We've got the Gnome King voiced by a guy named Nicole Williamson, a highly decorated actor, played Merlin in Excalibur, played Father Mourning in Exorcist 3, which was a movie we covered when I did a full episode on the Dahmer show on Netflix. And fun fact, a man named Nicole, smoked 80 cigarettes a day until he died at 75 of esophageal cancer. And Tim Curry was considered for this role at one point. And then, I'm picking out a few names of interest. And the last name of interest was the executive producer was Gary Kurtz. And if you read my book called The Star Wars Conspiracy or listened to my appearance on the Higher Side Chats many years ago talking about the Star Wars Conspiracy, you'll know that Gary Kurtz was part of the occult inspiration behind the whole story of Star Wars with the Force, that idea of consciousness in space, which, again, we'll hit that in the conclusion, but that's the end game. The end game is the digital matrix. The end game is space consciousness. And this movie is a mixture of the second and third book in the Oz series, because Homeboy wrote like 1,000 books on Oz. This is the second and third book. It's a mix of the two. And it's basically about Dorothy going back to Oz and meeting her alter ego, Ozma, kind of. And we could go into all this territory, but we're not going to rehash it. We talked about L. Frank Baum and his theosophical ideas of the occult back in part one of the Wizard of Oz series. So if you want more on that, there's an hour and a half of that stuff we already covered. But this movie was considered too damn scary. It failed. It was a commercial failure with all these big names behind it. Still failed because it was too scary. And they also couldn't make the characters look identical from the 30s Wizard of Oz because of copyrights to the original movie, even though the books were they were in the public domain at this point anyway. But they couldn't make it look like the movie. So, you know, the Tin Man looks a lot different. The Scarecrow looks a lot different and so on. But apparently Disney, who made this movie, they paid a grip of money to utilize the ruby slippers. So that is the one thing you'll find in common with the original movie is the ruby slippers. So without further ado, let's get into The Return of Oz.
This summer, Walt Disney Pictures presents a motion picture fantasy adventure beyond your fondest imagination. You'll be transported miraculously back to the enchanted land of Oz, that magical kingdom beloved by young and old for generations.
It's just a yellow brick.
No, Belina, you don't understand. This was the Yellow Brick Road.
You'll share with Dorothy Gale the shock of finding everything mysteriously changed.
What's happened to everybody?
And you'll delight with her discovery of four wonderful new friends who band together against a wicked queen and the dreaded Gnome King. This is the Oz you haven't seen before, and this is the Oz you'll want to visit again and again. From Walt Disney Pictures comes a whole new world of entertainment.
Why don't we just fly back to Kansas?
Return to Oz.
All right, it's plot spoiler time. We start out, we're in the Kansas Dust Bowl. We're in the Shanty Shack. Aunt Em, Uncle Henry, and Dorothy, all right? And Uncle Henry, he's reading up in the newspaper about the School and Sanitarium of Electric Healing by Dr. J.B. Worley. They call it the Weltmer Method, all right? And we find out it's been 6 months since the events of Wizard of Oz. And Dorothy hasn't been sleeping ever since she got back. She's talking about, oh, I saw the lion and the Tin Man and the Scarecrow. We all walked down the Yellow Brick Road, and Aunt Em and Uncle Henry are like, this kid is tripping. What's wrong with this kid? They want to fix her up. And Aunt Em says to Henry, she's like, look, my sister's got money. She's going to give me some money. We're going to take Dorothy to go get the electric healing. Uncle Henry's too proud. He's like, no, we're not doing that. But it turns out he's a bozo anyway. And he's completely absent in this family. But she's like, no, we're going to do it. We're going to take the money. We're going to go get her electrified. Electric shock therapy, basically. And I already don't like where that's headed. We're already off to a bad start here, folks. And Em says, She's bitching about Dorothy. She says, all she ever talks about is someplace that doesn't exist. All right? And we already talked about how Dorothy, she's not living with her real parents. Her real parents are absent. They're completely gone. And it's a Disney movie, so what do you expect? There's going to be some dead parents. That's one thing Disney likes is some dead parents. We talked about this many times. One idea is that is the New World Order, is to break down the nuclear family. Because when mommy and daddy are absent, guess who that leaves to fill in the role of caretaker? Big Daddy government. That's what people claim. I've talked to a woman who was in college for some kind of theatrical something or the other. She told me that the reason they remove parents from a storyline is because it just simplifies it. It makes it a lot easier. So, I mean, pick your poison of which one you want to believe they're doing. I don't really know why Aunt Em and Uncle Henry couldn't be replaced by two parents, but whatever. So Dorothy, she's in her room. She's trying to sleep, but, you know, she can't sleep. And she looks out a window and a shooting star falls to Earth. All right. Like Luciferian lightning, the rebel angel fallen from the heavens, as described in the Bible. And she starts playing with, she wakes up the next morning, she's playing with her rooster. And the rooster helps her find a key. And that key has an O and a Z on it, on the head of the key, right? And she thinks, oh, my friends gave me the key, because she's still a little girl, right? Ironically, she's much younger in this movie than the original, but, you know, don't ask. It's fine. She thinks her friends sent her this key via the shooting star. Now, there's some occult symbolism behind the key. Keys are represented as the keys to wisdom, or like the Enochian keys, the keys with which one can make contact with entities and talk to them, or the lost keys of Freemasonry, the book by Manly P. Hall, you know, Ronald Reagan's best friend. So she gets this key. She shows her mom. Her mom's like, you're always talking about crazy Oz talk. What do you get out of my face? And she hates Uncle Henry, lousy husband. He won't finish building the new house. His leg's all busted up, but he's milking it for everything it's worth. And she's out there working. She's rage cleaning the garden. She's like, that lousy ass husband, get off your ass. And Aunt Em, she takes Dorothy into town. She's like, screw this. I'm just taking her in to get electrocuted. I'm tired of this stuff. She's talking about crazy keys coming from outer space. Someone's got to fry this kid's brains out with electricity. So she takes her to this town, and she starts, Dorothy talks to the doctor, right? This doctor that does the electricity method. And she starts telling him about her goofy ass friends in Oz. And ironically, she tells him the story of the Tin Man cutting off all of his limbs, including his own head, which, if you recall from my Wizard of Oz part 2, we talked about the film and the book. That is actually from the book, if you read the book. It's a witch curse that the Tin Man starts cutting off his own limbs and his head. And so, you know, this one's actually more true to the stories, apparently, than the original film. And the doctor, he's like, I know, just the thing to cheer you up, little Dorothy. And he pulls out the electrical shock machine. Here we go.
I think I know just the thing to cheer Dorothy up. This electrical marvel will make it possible for you to sleep again. And it will also get rid of all those bad waking dreams that you've been telling me about. Now, this fella here has a face. You see it? Here are his eyes, and this must be his nose, and this must be his mouth. But what's this, Dorothy? Why, it's his tongue. Isn't it?
Will it hurt?
No. It just manages electrical current. Your aunt already knows we are at the dawn of a new age. In just 2 months, it will be the year 1900. A new century. The 20th century. A century of electricity.
The brain itself is an electrical machine. It's nothing but a machine. When it malfunctions, a blow to the head, for example, then the brain produces useless excess currents. And these excess currents are our dreams and delusions. And wouldn't you know, madam, we have found out that sometimes the brain malfunctions. Just like the dreams that you have, Dorothy. Now we have the means to control these excess currents.
Yes.
And listen to what he said. He said, it's the dawn of a new age. Isn't that how all these Illuminatis talk? That's how the Illuminatis talk. And this is very much, you know, he says, oh, the brain is just an electrical machine, because that's what scientists do. They reduce all of humanity down to inputs and outputs. All right. That's why when I sell t-shirts that the back say these nerds are going to kill us, I mean it. They have a very simplistic way of looking at life. They don't appreciate the human spirit. And this doctor is no different. He's very much like John C. Lilly, who thinks the mind is just a biocomputer. And we're going to cover that in depth in the conclusion. That's right. The guy who was humping dolphins and snorting ketamine in isolation tanks to make contact with entities in another dimension. And he was studying all that stuff at the National Institute of Health, by the way, in the 1950s, right? That NIH boy, they're into some wild stuff. Gain-of-function testing, which is a theory that gained a little more traction as a fact. I don't know if you guys caught that recently, but anyway. So anyway, okay, so Dorothy, she's looking at this electrical machine. And we get a glimpse of her, like a blonde doppelganger of her sort of thing. And I'm going to put all these images on my Instagram, and I'll put them on the video and stuff too. But yeah, she sees this blonde doppelganger sort of version. And I'm going to talk about this on another show, but I finished all of the Twin Peaks series, movie and the three seasons. I'm working on the books right now. I'm almost done reading The Diary of Laura Palmer. I've got a bunch of different theories going on in my mind about what's going on in this story. Please don't send... I got a bunch of links from people. I'm not actually consuming any theories of Twin Peaks until I'm done reading the books. I want to evolve this theory I've got in my head. And hopefully it's something new. Maybe it's not. A lot of people theorize about Twin Peaks. But it has something to do with duality natures, dissociative identity disorder, maybe doppelgangers, other dimensions, making contact, and sex magic, right? Sex magic is the secret behind all occult practices. I think it's all there. But again, there's a lot to unpack. That movie's, or that whole series is burned into my brain. So anyway. More to come on that. Stay subscribed to the show, folks. Oh, and also, I'm going to enable, you know, the way you get this show ad-free and all the bonus shows. I give a bonus show out every month, 160 and counting. You can support at patreon.com/IlluminatiWatcher, and you get the show ad-free, all the bonus shows, all the great things. I'm going to enable Apple Podcast Premium subscription, because a lot of people like that. It's an easy way to get the ad-free version of the show and all the bonus episodes. But that's going to take a lot of work on the back end for me. But I'm going to enable it. And over time, I'll sort of populate the older episodes as they go. I'm also trying to work out an issue I've got with the early access with my podcast host. So for now, it might not be early access. It might be in a couple weeks. You know, I don't know. I'll do a big announcement. But I will be enabling that here soon. And I'm also going to have to charge a higher amount. Apple takes like half the freaking money. Whatever. So I'm going to have to raise. So it's going to be more expensive than Patreon, unfortunately. But anyway, I big. I'm going to work on that here soon. So get ready for that. So stay subscribed however you want to stay subscribed. I know Leo DiCaprio at the end of my show, sometimes he gives you guys a, you know, calls you guys free feed losers. I can't believe it. Oh, it's so rude. Okay, anyway. So Aunt Em, she drops Dorothy off. She's like, here, go get electrocuted. And then she dips. What the hell? What's wrong with this lady? That's what happens when you don't have your real parents. They don't care. And she's strapped down to the table. And before she gets strapped down to the table, she's in a room and her doppelganger shows up. She just manifests out of thin air and hands her a pumpkin. And she's like, oh, it's Halloween soon. Which, of course, you know, that's Illuminati confirmed. Samhain is one of the most important nights. When the veil is thinnest, where you can make contact with entities, which is exactly what she's doing here. So she disappears. Dorothy, they strap her down to the table, the gurney, and they're about to hit her with the switch. Giving off some real Requiem for a Dream vibes, if you've seen that movie. If you haven't seen that movie, those are not good vibes, all right? Not good vibes to have when you're strapped down with the electrode strapped to your head. So the lightning hits. Sorry, my voice is wrecked again. So the lightning hits right when they're about to hit the switch and the power goes out just in time, right? The power goes out. It's a reverse Frankenstein scene here. And you see the blonde doppelganger girl. She comes, she unties Dorothy and she's trying to help her escape from the facility. And you hear screams from the cellar. And she tells her, oh, those are some of the damaged patients that are all, they stockpile them down the cellar. What the? This is a kid's movie. And you wonder why it's so dark. We're going to tell you why it's so dark in the conclusion. So Dorothy and Blondie, they escape this institute. Dorothy ends up in a crate. She's floating out in the ocean. Don't ask. She takes a little nap. She wakes up. And her rooster from the farm, the one that gave her the key, Belina, she's in the crate with her. And they end up in the desert. Okay? And again, this film is actually more like the books than the original film. Because I read the original, I only read the first book. I didn't read the sequels, right? But in the original book, there's a desert realm surrounding Oz. That's why Oz had to take a hot air balloon in. All right. So anyways, she ends up getting past the desert and getting into Oz again. And there's a bunch of rocks watching her as she's doing this. And they're reporting to this nefarious rock overlord that we find out is the Gnome King. All right. But for now, there's something really wrong in Oz. Okay, Dorothy, she gets there and she's like, man, something's a little off. She finds her old house, the one that landed on the witch, but like, where are the munchkins? And the yellow brick road's all busted up. But she follows it, she gets to the Emerald City, but the Emerald City's all jacked up. Everyone's made of stone, the whole town is falling apart. Nobody around. Even the Tin Man and the Lion, she finds them, they're made of stone. Then here comes the bad guys, the Wheelers, okay? It's a bunch of creepers, and then their hands and their feet are made of wheels. Like a bunch of rollerbladers, right? And but Dorothy, she's got that key, remember? So she has the key, she opens the door, and she's hiding from the Wheelers now. And while she's hiding in this little shed, she finds this mechanical man and winds him up back to life, and he says, oh, my name is TikTok. That's right, TikTok, like the app. And we find out he wasn't actually turned to stone. And the reason why is because he wasn't human. All right. And the story is relayed that the Gnome King, the events in the 6 months since Dorothy left, because remember, Oz flew away at the end of Wizard of Oz. So who's running the joint? Well, here comes the Gnome King. He turned everybody to stone. And you find out why later. I'll tell you why. And, we hear that Dorothy, she's looking for the Scarecrow too now. She can't find him. And TikTok is like, hey, you got to go find Princess Mombi. And she gets out. She goes to Princess Mombi. The princess has a bunch of heads on display. It's very strange. And she swaps them out. And now Mombi, she meets Dorothy and she's like, oh, she's like her buddy for a second. But then Mombi's like, you know what? I think I want your head too, bitch. So she's the new bad guy. She's the new bad witch. And those heads are symbolic of alter egos. Dissociative identity disorder. We'll cover that later. So Dorothy, she's like trapped up by the Mombi chick in her little castle. But then that pumpkin that the blondie gave her at the beginning sort of manifests itself. Now it's the pumpkin head named Jack. And Jack tells Dorothy that Princess Mombi has a little secret powder in her little room. Take a listen.
Well, my mother built me to scare that awful witch, Mombi. She stood me in a place where Mombi would meet me, face to face. And along she came. Sure enough, she was scared. But then she was angry. She has a terrible temper.
I know. Where did she get all those different heads?
Did you see the headless dancing girls outside?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's where she got them. Anyway, Mombi was about to destroy me with her stick, but she decided to test some powder of life she just bought from a magician. She did. It worked. Here I am.
Powder of life?
You sprinkle it on something, and the thing comes to life.
Does Mombi have any more of it?
If she does, it's in cabinet 31 with her original head.
Listen to what they call it. They call it the powder of life. This is the alchemical philosopher's stone. This is theosophy. This is the occult. This is Illuminati confirmed. That's what these scientists are into. They're trying to find life extension, immortality options. One option, digital consciousness. Which will, again, we're going to hit that later. So Dorothy, she goes on a little secret mission, a little creepy crawly, if you will. And she gets into Princess Mombi's chamber. She snags the powder of life. And you can see it. It's got a label on it and stuff, right? And you find out that it only works if you use it as a magical spell. You have to say the words into existence. This is the incantation thing. This is abracadabra. As I speak, I create. Which is the fundamental ideas of alchemy and ritual magic and all that. In the label, it says, wiat, tiat, piat. Right? Some nonsensical words. But it's an incantation regardless. You have to sprinkle the powder. Boom. Say the words. So she gets the powder. She animates some moose heads. She grabs TikTok. She grabs Jack the pumpkin head. And she's like, let's go. They head to the Gnome King's mountain. Right? So they get to the mountain. And the Gnome King, of course, is this nefarious voice you hear throughout the movie. The voice that the rocks are talking to. Smelling what the rock is cooking. And the rocks, they're all watching this whole thing go down. And they're snitching the whole time to the Gnome King, the whole time. And the Gnome King shows up and he says, he asks what Dorothy and the crew, what they want. And Dorothy's like, look, I just want the Scarecrow. And the Gnome King's like, listen up, bitch. People have been stealing all my emeralds. People have been going underground in my mountain, stealing all my gems, all my emeralds to make the Emerald City all these years. And that's why I had to punish them. So I froze up the whole city. And guess what? You're next. And he swallows her up and sends her underground. That's right. Just like Alice in Wonderland, she's falling down the rabbit hole to learn her lesson. And what's interesting here is that the Gnome King previously had eaten up the Scarecrow as well. Because he thought the Scarecrow had stolen some of the emeralds. But I didn't understand why the Tin Man and the Lion got off so easy. They just turned to stone. They don't really explain it. It's probably in the books. Well, when Dorothy and the crew are all underground, there's an interesting shot where you can see that TikTok, this mechanical entity, he has a base, sort of. It's hard to explain. But there's an X inside of an O, which again ties us into the original film. Remember we talked about in part two, the Wizard of Oz film, how strange it was that there was this X and O symbolism all over the place and Super X and all this crazy stuff.
Right.
So the Gnome King, he says, all right, listen up. Now that you're underground, I'm going to teach you a lesson. You got three chances to win this game. And if you win, you can turn all these objects into, you can animate all of them or do whatever it is you want. But if you lose, you turn into an ornament and you stay here forever. All right. And the idea is that if they win, they can get the Scarecrow back. Well, they have to go inside of a cave to play the game. All right. Again, more ideas of Inner Sanctum, maybe even Plato's cave. You could apply that analogy here of questioning what is reality, the shadows on the cave. The moose, it goes in there first, fails. TikTok, it goes in there next, fails. And the whole time this is happening, it's kind of interesting because they show the Gnome King and he looks very much like the pagan Holly King from the pagan version of Christmas. And guess what? He's also got Dorothy's ruby slippers on, right? So he's kind of looking like a pimp right now. He's looking like a, more like a queen, baby. And so the Gnome King's like, all right, Dorothy, everyone else couldn't get it together. It's your turn to get in there. So she goes in the cave and we find out TikTok, he hasn't been turned into an ornament yet. He's actually still alive. He's got one more guess. And he sheds a little tear. He's like, look, I'm about to die because I'm about to get my third guess wrong. I want you to watch me get this third guess and you can use that information for you to make the correct guess. And so she basically does it. I lost my spot in the notes here. Over here flailing around. So he's like, I want you to figure it out, Dorothy. So Dorothy, she watches TikTok die, and then it doesn't really matter anyway. She ends up using her intuition to guide herself to the correct object to win the game. And it turns out to be an emerald. And she gets Scarecrow, and she's like, okay, all the green ornaments are former inhabitants of Oz. So they go try to wake up all the people of Oz. But then the Gnome King's getting pissed now. He's like, no one was supposed to win this game. It was a trick. They were supposed to lose. So he starts eating up all these people, right? But he accidentally eats an egg. Because remember, the rooster's involved with all this. The rooster's hanging out. And he says, the eggs are poison. And he starts crumbling and he dies. This is back when eggs were cheap too. But he's like, no, I can't eat the egg. And he dies. And Dorothy snatches up the slippers. She gets out of the mountain before it crumbles down completely. All of Emerald City actually rebuilds itself. They give her a big parade. And they're like, we want you to be the Queen of Oz. She's like, look, I can't do that. I got to go back to Kansas. I wish I could be in both places. Dun, dun, dun. Foreshadowing.
We're the best friends anyone's ever had. I've got to go back.
We understand, Dorothy.
Do you? I wish I could be in both places at the same time.
Mama, look! Behind you in the mirror!
Thank you. was afraid you would drown.
Help me step through the glass, Dorothy.
So she's like, I wish I could be in both places. But guess what? She can. If you manifest your doppelganger, you make contact with your alter ego, your holy guardian angel, you can do that. So in the mirror behind her, Blondie manifests again. It's Dorothy's doppelganger, and she reaches through the looking glass with Dorothy's help to break on through to the other side. Dorothy reaches into the abyss and brings her back in, and she says, my name is Ozma. My father is Oz. Whatever, whatever, right? And, you know, all's well that ends well. And then Dorothy wakes up. She's in Kansas. Back in Kansas. She's in some kind of like swamp hell. But they show her with her one eye, her all-seeing eye, is opened now. A green eye, an emerald eye at that. Which is maybe that's why they chose her. Maybe she had the greenest eyes. Which I remember reading about the woman who plays Dorothy, and I think that was what her name, she's Persian, and her real name has something to do with green eyes. Anyway, we find out that the clinic had burned to the ground from the lightning strike, and the doctor died trying to save his machines. Likely story. And then she ends up going home. She is in her room, and she looks in the mirror at home, and she sees Blondie, Ozma, her alter ego, in the mirror, and her mom's coming up to talk to her, and she's like, oh, there's my alter ego, crazy alter living in the mirror, and Ozma gives her the vow of silence. She puts her finger to her lips, the vow of Harpocrates. She says, you can't tell anybody about this. And Dorothy is happy about it. She's like, yeah, good call. And mom's acting all happy, as if she didn't just subject her kid to electroshock therapy. Dad's finally off his lazy ass working on the house. And Dorothy goes out and plays in the yard, all is well. Roll the credits. No big deal. So in conclusion, why is it Illuminate confirmed? Because Dorothy is traumatized into creating an alter ego, Ozma. We've talked about alter egos on this show many, many times. It's the idea of a dissociative state. Oh boy. A dissociative identity disorder. David Icke was one of the first people I've ever heard talk about this. I think it was on his Freedom Road VHS tape I had. Talked about the amnesic barrier. Right. When the mind is subjected to trauma, it dissociates. It has to escape. It can't process all that. So it goes into another realm. And sometimes it can create a different identity, very Manchurian candidate style. And these were ideas actually studied by the CIA with MKUltra. These ideas of mind control, making contact with entities in other dimensions, you know, Project Stargate, the men who stare at goats, all that stuff. Even the Gateway Project was looking at stuff like this, about training the different hemispheres of the mind. And of course, you can get to this realm through abuse, which is very terrifying, right? And of course, the mirrors are all throughout this movie, in the palace and stuff. The mirrors are the portals, the gateway. That's why it's through the looking glass, right? That's what the Alice in Wonderland second book is titled. And let's give you the facts here. John C. Lilly, the guy I talked about earlier, was humping dolphins and stuff. He wrote a book I read called Programming and Metaprogramming in the Human Biocomputer, right? And he encapsulates the technocratic fantasies of science about he talks about approaching studies of the mind as a biocomputer, right? And this is what fueled a lot of MK Ultra studies. If you read the pre, I'm going to read you directly from the book. The preface says, all human beings, all persons who reach adulthood in the world today are programmed biocomputers. They generally think that you can reduce the human experience to bits, to binary digits of ones and zeros, which is very wrong. He says that our minds are merely computers and they are mapped out based upon survival necessities and patterns of function. And how I read that, when he says survival necessities, when you see all this traumatizing and abuse, particularly of children, you say, what kind of animals would do this? What kind of evil monsters? Well, when you understand that you can fracture a mind forcing this dissociative state through trauma and abuse, and this isn't just me coming up with, these are books like, if you read Kathy O'Brien's Transformation of America, you read Bryce Taylor's Thanks for the Memories, Fritz Springmeier's books on creating a mind control slave, countless movies we've talked about over the years showing you this idea. It seems that this is a real thing. Is it happening and who is doing it? I don't have those answers. I'm very sorry. But I do know, reading this John C. Lilly book, you can extrapolate a lot of these ideas from this research. And the book lays out some very basic assumptions when looking at this idea of the mind as a biocomputer. I'm going to read to you from the one section. Some of this is like wordy, right? It says, programs vary in their permanence. Some are apparently evanescent and erasable. Others operable without apparent change for tens of years. Among the evanescent and erasable programs, one might categorize the ability to use visual projection in the service of one's own thinking. One finds this ability with a very high incidence among children and a very low incidence among adults. So visual projection, easier done through children, all right? An example of a program operating without change for tens of years, one can show handwriting over a long series of years to maintain its own unique patterns. Programs are acquirable throughout life. Apparently, no matter how old a person is, there is still possibility of acquiring new habits. The difficulties of acquisition may increase with age. See, that's why it's important. That's why they mess with the kids. However, it is not too sure that this is correct. The problem may not be with acquiring programs as much as a decrease in the motivation for acquiring programs, meaning the young mind is eager to learn. The old mind is set in its ways, stubborn, like old Uncle Henry sitting on his ass. He's like, you know what? I'm not building this house. I'm tired. Maybe if I was 20, young, dumb, and full of fun, I'd be willing to build this house, but I'm done. And I get it, right? I'm in my 40s. That's how I feel sometimes. Like, you know what? I'm done. I'm just going to put my feet up and watch Twin Peaks 100 more times. But back to John C. Lilly. He says that the mind can be programmed. And how do you do it? Through symbols. That's right. Through the unconscious. It's a term he calls metaprogramming. And much like these occultists, it's all about making contact with the divine, making contact with God, annihilation of the ego. Let me read you from the book, and then we're going to wrap it up. He says, even as one can travel inside one's models, inside one's head, talking about cognitive models, that's what we talked about in Aliens, UFOs, and the Occult, Use Your Illusion 2. Well, 1 and 2, both of them. He says, even as one can travel inside one's models, inside one's head, so can one travel outside or be the outside of one's model of the universe, still inside one's head. In this metaprogram, it is as if one joins the creators, unites with God, etc. Here one can so attenuate the self that it may disappear. He's talking about the Apollonian technique from making contact with God. I'm sorry, the Dionysian, excuse me. It's the Dionysian. It's when you overwhelm with drugs or something like that, LSD maybe, so that the consciousness and the ego shrinks so that it can make contact with the higher entity of God and be absorbed into it. It's the annihilation of self, the annihilation of ego. It says right there, here one can attenuate the self so that it may disappear. Look, I've done a hell of a lot of ketamine in my day. There's some truth to that, it seems like. If you don't know what I'm talking about, I did two episodes with my beautiful wife on a show called Breaking Social Norms that I do. It's not for everyone. But I talk about ketamine therapy and the experiences from it. It's pretty wild. Of course, I was with medical professionals, not illegal. I would never, ever in a million years recommend taking illegal substances. And it's not because I'm a do-gooder. It's because you don't know what kind of crap they put in this stuff. Fentanyl. People crazy stuff and stuff now. Anyway. here's where we're going to boil this down to in the very conclusion here. Why do they want to do this? It's the perennial philosophy, okay? It's to annihilate God's creation of man and send us out into space. If you don't believe me, I'm going to read you one last quote from John C. Lilly's book. It says, the planet-wide consciousness joins into solar system's consciousness, into galaxy-wide consciousness, intergalactic sharing of consciousness, fused into the mind of the universe, finally faces its creator, the star maker. The universe's mind realizes that its creator knows its imperfections and will tear it down to start over, creating a more perfect universe. So that's what they want to do. Annihilate man's ego, create a digital matrix, right? Digitize our consciousness, send it out into space, exactly what happens in the sequels to 2001: A Space Odyssey, if you read all those books. Because God is this impersonable scientific universe. And it says right there, the universe's mind realizes that its creator knows its imperfections and will tear it down to start over, creating a more perfect universe. So there you go, Return of Oz. Illuminate confirm. What do you think? So that's the fourth part of the Wizard of Oz deep dive. I can't imagine there's going to be a part 5. But stay subscribed in case there are. And if you haven't heard part 1 through 3, I did a lot of work. I did a lot of research for those. I'll have the links in the show notes. Check them out. And if you want to support the show, you know where to go. I'm going to do all the things. All the links are in the show notes. Patreon.com/IlluminatiWatcher. Or sign up for the Apple Premium subscription. I'm going to enable that really soon. Hell, it might be there by the time you listen to this episode. And I will start the process of back populating all the podcast episodes, uploading all the bonus episodes. But it'll be up to date to present and future. You know, when I drop the bonus episode here in the next week or two, I'll put it right on there. Okay? The early access may not be enabled. I got to do some back end work to make that happen, but it'll get there. And it's going to cost more than Patreon. That's the last thing I got to tell you. It's going to cost a couple bucks more than Patreon. And you don't get the books. You know? You go to Patreon, you get the books. Hey, you know what? Some people want to do the Apple thing. Fine by me. Okay, everybody. Thanks for listening to the show. Thanks for dealing with my voice. I've been dealing with it. You've been dealing with it. We're all very sorry about that. Until next time, stay woke.